Blog Talk Radio.
Intro.
Get up again and smile. Get up again and smile.
A new report lists Minnesota among the worst states in America for racial inequality. The website 24/7 Wall Street listed Minnesota as the second most unequal state in the country behind Wisconsin. It measured gaps between blacks and white residents in areas like unemployment, income, and home ownership. New at 10, WCCO's Jeff Wagner learned what the numbers mean and how organizations are trying to bring balance to Minnesota.
Racial inequality is no secret in the United States. Earlier this month, the tension connected to it ignited in the streets of Charlottesville, Virginia.
We look at Charlottesville, and we look at the tiki torches burning there, but people don't realize we're being scorched every day here in America, especially here in Minnesota.
Minneapolis NAACP President Jason Soule feels his point is validated thanks to a recent study by 24/7 Wall Street, which labeled Minnesota as the second most racially unequal state in the country, right behind Wisconsin and just ahead of South Dakota, Illinois, and Iowa.
I'm from Chicago. I graduated in Waterloo, Iowa. I've been living in Minnesota the last 17 years. Every place I've lived, I felt this immense pressure.
The study found that black people in Minnesota are 10 times more likely to end up in jail or prison than white people. It also found the median income for a black household is just over $30,000, but a white household is double that number. Race relations experts feel those two statistics are directly connected.
If you do have employment, it pays a very low wage. You are a renter at best. And then if you are thoroughly outside of the labor market and participating in the underground economy, then you may end up in jail.
Soule says fixing the issues starts by holding government entities and law enforcement accountable. Mobilizing is the next step.
Use that report and analyze it critically. Let's talk about it with our families. What do these numbers represent?
That study also found that black people in Minnesota have a home ownership rate of 21%, but the number for white people was more than triple at 76%.
And Jeff, how about Minnesota's education system? How will that play into this?
You know, that's where we have that achievement gap that people know about in this state. The latest numbers from the Minnesota Department of Education found that in grades 3 through 8 and also 10th, the amount of white students who met the standard for reading and math was about double that of black students. So these disparities clearly are beginning at a young age.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Good morning and welcome to Our Black News. I'm Don Allen, 30A, 30B over there. I'm posting some stuff all over social media as Mr. Jonathan Mason. And I have
doing great, sir.
I have to give credit to WCCO. They did that report a couple years ago, and it's a shame it's still relevant today, but you know, we have to frame this in a way that people understand that we're not just out here, you know, neither one of us, Jonathan, are playing the victim. We're not victims, you know. We're capable of doing
right.
a lot of things. But there are a lot of people that are and that feel that way, and they wonder what's happening in a city, in a state where these disparities can be so steep among a pocket or caste of individuals. And we talk about it year after year after year after year. And, again, this takes me back to the 1965 debate between, Baldwin, James Baldwin and Buckley, where if you played that today, it would have the same meaning. But I know there's a lot of things going on, Jonathan, especially like the city council. I had a gentleman to call. Go ahead, say it.
No, you're absolutely right. I think we don't play the victim here. Due to the fact that we, you know, were educated, we took the time to be able to, you know, try to map these things out as far as seeing what the next steps are. And I know you're probably going to go on to the Minneapolis City Council, and that's a great place to start because I'm sure you've heard of some of the things that I've been hearing, and maybe you want to touch on it, and then we can go into it a little deeper for the backdrop on what's going on with the Minneapolis City Council and some of its members that are not necessarily trying to defund the police.
Yes, and with that said, you know, I got a message from a gentleman who's actually with us right now. He just called in. I switched him through the live line. So, Jim, you're live. About the Zoom meetings. He's been attending the Zoom meetings. Welcome. Welcome, Jim.
Oh, thank you. I've been listening for a few years. First-time caller. Enjoy your show, and thanks for all the work you fellows are doing. Yeah, I don't usually get involved, but I've just been noticing something really bothersome. I mean, it's not only bothersome, but it's troublesome. I do enjoy zooming in on some of these council meetings and coffee hours, and there's a lot going on in Minneapolis to follow with the emergency budget and police, of course, and safety and this and that. Time and again, some white person will either talk over some legitimate black person's view if it's not quite online with a defund or dismantled message, or speak up and say who's speaking for black folks and brown folks, as if black folks, I mean, did they miss that Black Lives Matter is like an international movement? Like there's an attitude like if we don't speak up for them, what's going to happen? Nothing will happen. Like they're doing, black folks are doing, in a way, just fine getting the message out. And you know what I'm saying? Like this helplessness attitude or this infantilization just blows my mind. But there was an incident on, I'll get right to. So I don't want to speak for Andrea Jenkins or put her on a spot or whatever. But it's becoming perceived that she's definitely not.
Way definitely not as far left as Councilmember Ellison or Fletcher or some of the others. I've watched her a while. She has tried to be reasonable on this. She just lives a couple blocks from 38th and Chicago. So she's really lived this terror for real. It's not some abstract discussion for her, the safety or the danger going on. So the fact that she even inkled that she might not be quite for dismantling, she's going to support this black male chief of police who's earned it and has not gotten the respect, in my opinion and many other people's opinion, from some white members and some black members of the council. She's going to stick with, and she thinks he can maybe do it. You don't have to agree. You can think she's off the wall. You can think she's got a point, whatever you want to think, but just to erase and discussion online yesterday. Some white folks were just going, wow, like, what happened? She's lost her mind. What's happened to her? How could she slip? What erasure and supreme attitude, and you all talk about you're trying to battle it and reduce it. Oh, you're living it over and over. I'm sorry. I just had to get this out and vent and maybe hear your impression of, you know, maybe you're saying, that's not black news. That's nothing new at all. We've been living this. But it's really gotten epidemic now. It's just gotten crazy.
Okay, Jim, let me do a little recap here of what you're saying. You're saying that the city council members are, some of them, especially in this case, a council member, a Minneapolis city council member, respectively, Andrea Jenkins, is might be having an epiphany about really deciding to defund the Minneapolis Police Department, but she is supporting the chief, Arredondo, Chief Rondo in Minneapolis, and some of the, as you described, white female liberals are not happy with them. Would that accurately describe what you're saying?
Right, particularly, I mean, and some of the Zoom shutdown, there was another example. I listened into a Ward 13 discussion, and it was mostly white folks with the morning free to talk and come to this coffee hour.
Yeah.
Said, we definitely got to do some changes here, but I'm not sure I'm about this complete abolition. It can't be without a police force. Later in the chat box, some white women came after him or, you know, said, who's going to speak for black people? Who's going to speak? People of color. And I said, you just erased this man who just told you what he said.
Yeah.
He's just one man, and so you're a couple white people saying, don't believe this. Believe me when I tell you I'm speaking for black people. It's just drives me nuts. Back to the council, I don't really want to speak
for Vice President Jenkins what she's doing. But, I mean, for instance, next week she's having a virtual safety discussion with the chief. So that kind of signals that she's at least trying to work from within this. I mean, I think I can safely say she's not going to dump this black chief of police like some other of her members are. So I'm seeing some white folks react to that, and they just can't, it just blows my mind. They can't even comprehend that she would have that idea. It's just so
That's part of
it's almost funny, but it's troublesome.
Yeah, that's part of this plantation mentality. You're ours. Yeah. We own you. We voted you in. You're going to do what we say. You're going to live. You're going to lean the way we want you to lean, even though you're an elected official and you should have your own direction. But when you stray off
I speak for you. And if you don't, if you don't say what I'm going, what I want you to say, I'm going to say it, and I'm going to,
Yeah. Okay. Sorry about that, Jim. But anyway, you just dropped out, but that's okay. We'll get you back in here. You should be able to hear us now. But anyway, this is very interesting, Jonathan, because for many years, especially in 2008, 2009, the city council, that particular mold of the city council, a lot of these things were when you're talking about police shootings, when you're talking about reorganizing or retraining police, and then coming into 2011 to 15 when some small actions were taken, like getting a psychologist and doing that kind of thing and really vetting these guys. But the real movement to police training and this defunding issue is kind of dead in the water if it goes on the ballot in November.
Right. And honestly, Don, I'm to the spot where I think that with the Minneapolis City Council, they were put in there, you know, we have people of color. We have Felipe Cunningham. We have Andrea Jenkins. We have Ellison. And the reason why things aren't getting done, and it's not Andrea. I wouldn't say Andrea, but the other two, Felipe and Jeremiah, they're beholden to this liberal party, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Andrea Jenkins is actually feeling it because the moment we try to speak on the behalf of our community,
mm-hmm.
which, like the Jim said, that she's actually living near 38th in Chicago.
Yeah.
She's part of the community. I don't know in what rabbit world, if you think you're going to defund the police with no strategic plan and then saying that we don't, and it's really, and I talk about this all the time with the white liberals, especially white women liberals, who want to dictate the conversation for the black community.
Yeah.
So they hear, they see a police shooting, and they hear us upset about it because, you know, the black community is upset. Historically, we know what's going on. But they don't, they think that they're gerrymandering to our group to be able to get in culturally. I at the point, and this is where it's at, Don.
Mm-hmm.
I see Minnesota, really, the Democratic Party actually crumbling right in front of us, not only on a national scale, but here in Minnesota.
Yes.
We know that the Senate is going to remain Republican.
Yes.
If you don't know, we've told you first on our Black page.
Now you know.
But Andrea Jenkins is going to now, and if you're tuning in, Andrea, you know, we talk regularly, but I really want you to feel what's going on to you, and this is the type of hypocrisy that's been happening within the black community, and there's no progression. They always talk about this progressive party, but we're actually trying to progress in a manner where we want to be able to control what policing looks like within our community, but that doesn't mean when you're going off on these radical tangents saying we don't want police, and they're really mad at Rhonda. That's why after listening and figuring out what's going on, I'm actually going to be reaching out to Rondo, Chief Arredondo, to actually now work alongside of him, to actually try to help build this bridge between police and community, because I think this is the time to do it, because we have these radical left, really white and black, white, feminist, liberal women who are actually anti-black. And so that's why they turned on Andrea so quick.
Yes.
They're anti-black. They only do that to make themselves look good within our society. You know, they can't wait to say Black Lives Matter. I always give this example. I had this white lady, and she's on Communities Against Police Brutality.
Okay.
Her name's Michelle Gross. I don't want to throw her under, but you know, she's doing her work. But she told me, "You're not Black Lives Matter. You're not in the group." Well, I'm a black man,
mm-hmm.
so we have to start separating what's actually going on. I know a lot of people are getting these groups; they feel like they're in the black community, but it's time for people like yourself and me to be able to help Andrea get the community together to get these things done.
Yes, and I do. Thank you, the audience. Thank you, our invisible audience. You know, and it's really, you know, you speak really eloquently about really what's needed to move, you know, not only our agendas, because we both have agendas. We have agendas when we're together, and we have agendas, separate agendas. But the thing is, you know, I would like to see some economic healing in the black community so that people that we deal with, that we talk to, that we interact with, the business people, can actually do and work on missions that are successful for us. You know, it's not about, you know, that liberal base that goes after Andrea Jenkins for the Minneapolis City Council because she's having second thoughts about the defund the police movement, which is ill-equipped to say the least. But who really, if someone's shooting up my block, I'm trained to go to the phone and dial 911. What happens when we get to the point, if you're not a gun owner or a rifle owner, what happens when we get to the point when we say we have to train our brains to understand that 911 will not bring any results because it was defunded because of this generational misconduct? That's when the problem comes. That's when the civil war starts. That's when the underground economy will flourish, and a lot of people will lose their lives, way more that than have in the past 10 or 15 years by random police shootings here and there.
And Don, you touched on a lot of things, and we're at the spot where that is due to unemployment. The COVID-19 is coming back. We know that districts are going to be able to choose what they want to do. We understand that unemployment just civil up. Donald Trump is now, he's actually removing and banning TikTok. I don't know if a lot of people knew about this, but he's actually going to be removing TikTok from America. And as a father, you know, I'm not mad at him because I think I've seen the and this is just me speaking on my opinion. As a father, you know, my daughter is on TikTok and stuff like that. I watch some of this stuff, and I'm like, what in the world is going on? I've already removed multiple videos, and she doesn't even know what she's doing just because of the way the algorithms, how it's set up as far as with the music. And then I'm listening to the music, and I'm saying, honey, you don't listen to this type of music. What in the world is going on? And she said, no, I just turn it on. So I think that's a good move. We're going to hear a lot of pushback on this. People are going to be afraid. But see, once again, we have to start being logical, Don. We're at a spot where logic has now been thrown out the window. We have people throwing out radical ideas. There's no one who's saying, let's actually bring it, and I'm going to go back on, piggyback on what you said, the economic justice part.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting away from, honestly, you know, we have these poverty pimps. We have these people who are actually mad when we're talking about starting businesses, teaching people how to do
business.
Upset, because the grant money, it stops their grant money.
Exactly, because we want people to be successful. I don't care if you – I mean, I was a sales manager, and do you think I gave a damn if my salespeople made more than me? I was happy. I was so happy. I was like, you just earned tickets to Mazatlan, Mexico, or this or that. Congratulations. You know why? Because I was getting a piece of that. And you encourage them to go out and do better. We have to encourage our community. We have to be comfortable with what we have and encourage our community to go out and do the best they can do. Even in the Bible, it says, do works greater than he. Okay?
Right.
And we're forgetting how great we are as a people, number one. We're forgetting how we've been blessed to have the knowledge, the capability, the strength, the determination to climb the highest peaks, even through, you know, obstructions, hate, block, you know, all this crap. Jonathan, you hit on like something that is amazing, amazing, amazing that I got to back up track. I got to backtrack too.
Okay.
That TikTok technology. What you see when you go to TikTok is some tweens, some teenage, usually white females, and in the background, they're dancing to some really hardcore rap music. Okay?
Yep.
The algorithms for not only TikTok, but Facebook, Amazon, Twitter, what else is there? Instagram.
Yep.
They can take, they currently right now scan your face and sell it to the government.
Yeah.
And people and people aren't paying attention to any of this and what's going on. And that's the value. When Black America asks for restitution, which I call it restitution because you have to have restitution to determine amount, the amount, before you can have
reparations,
which is the amount of money. So there's a two stages to that. So these guys that always run to reparations, they need to go back to the drawing room and figure out what is the price tag, what is the restitution, because the restitution is going to figure out the reparations, and that's
you're hit it. And we have to focus on I've been doing a lot of business. We're trying to work with legislators. We're trying to get into the Department of Black Business, and I'm on all levels right now. But what you realize, this is within the Black community. And it's a generational curse. I call it a generational curse.
It is.
It is. But it's a fact that some of us don't even know, for example, like who the AG is. But we know it's Keith Ellison, but they just don't even know the procedural part. Like, where do you get started? I sometimes tell people, where do you want to go from here?
Mm-hmm.
And you really realize, I just sit back and listen, they don't have a damn clue.
Yeah.
And this is what I think where we're at with defunding the police. This is where we're at with equity solutions for kids who are doing distant learning. We have to be focused on these type of things way ahead of the ball game, and then understanding this a strategic method that we're going to go. And it's so simple sometimes. And you know when and the white community has it down. I just want to tell you guys this: the white community knows that they cross all their T's. They dot all their I's.
Boom, boom, boom.
Sometimes it's bad. You know, they might change the report.
Yeah.
They might do this or that. But making sure they know everything that's on that report. And then when they're doing business, they execute. And that's another thing. When you execute on – the execution part is tangible asset, tangible money. So when we're talking about restitution and reparation, we can't just scream it. We have to have a 1,000-point plan. We have to have if it's a business, you have to talk about an ROI. If you don't know that lingo, you don't know that terminology or whatever the case may be, you have to educate yourself. And this is why I'm talking about reading. The reading is so vital.
Yeah.
You have to read to
understand
this. You know what I mean? So we're at this stage right now that we're holding white America accountable in the systems that it play. But now we're at a standstill.
Total.
As a society.
Yeah.
And because, you know, there's a pandemic going on, Don.
Yes.
And legislative season is coming upon us. What legislation do we have as a Black community drawn up, ready to go? Right when the legislative period goes, we're right. We know exactly who we need to talk to. And it can't be so partisan.
Yeah.
That's another thing. There's people, and if you think I'm a liberal, I'm not. Okay, I'm telling people now on the news, I'm not a liberal. I'm actually just for honesty, truth, and then transparency and prosperity. If you're in a capitalistic system, you need to get capital.
Thank you.
You need to get capital. Your cell phone.
Yay!
I'm down on marching.
Yeah.
Now we have to start talking about economic justice.
Exactly.
What does it look like for the Black community?
Yeah.
Are we going to put businesses in place for people? Where's the independent contractors? Where's the LLC? Where's these people writing grants and proposals on the behalf of us or for businesses? They don't do it.
Yeah.
They want to literally talk about anti-justice. It is anti-justice. But they're talking about anti-violence. but show up to the scene mm-hmm. with their cell phone. Mason does that.
Yeah.
You might as well pay me.
Yeah.
that's
funny. Yeah, that's hilarious. And to dovetail off what you're saying is that, you know, there are some huge issues in the distribution of dollar X and dollar Z. And it used to be, I've been following one of the assignments. I don't know if you saw my Facebook page, but I put this picture of AOC up and this long narrative because I wanted to really see how many males are going to hate on this woman, okay, AOC,
right.
The congresswoman,
right.
The youngest congresswoman ever. And I did it as type of an experiment because I read all these New York Times, Washington Post articles about her. I said, okay, she's a positive. Hey, Michelle, she's a positive example of success for any young woman. You can't take that away from her, right? There's no way you can take that away. I'll guarantee you, Democrat or Republican. She
right.
is a real model. She's, like I said, a female lead. So I posted that. And I can't believe all the political BS, oh, she's this, she's that, she's a Marxist, she's this. And that's not the point. And when you say reading, it's important that people read. You don't have to like a person, but we need to get back to that old-time politics where from 8 in the morning until 5, you're a Democrat. I don't have to like you. But at 5:30, we're sitting at Dixie's on Grand having a burger and a brew. You know what I mean? That different old school politics.
Right.
And we're at this part that is, like you said, it's so partisan that not only do you not like me, you hate me because of my political views. And we can't find a middle ground to sit down and have a beer, a glass of wine, a shot of scotch, or even a barbecue in each other's backyard because of this unknown developed mental hate for whatever political view or political frame that I have as an individual, which is my individual right as a human in the United States. We're not in communist China. We're not in Japan. We're not in Russia. So we can be Republicans, Green, Democrat, Independent, Undecided, whatever. And you
right.
should be fine with that and not – go ahead.
And no, you hit it. I hate to say it. We're all human, right?
Yeah.
I would say we're all human first.
Mm-hmm.
Humanity first. But when we're looking at this political structure as far as like liberal – or conservative, or whatever the case may be, Democrat, Republican, we're really just American. We should just start focus on that.
Yeah.
That's our umbrella. We're American.
That's it.
We all are hoping to make America better.
You're actually right.
I'm not saying it's make it great again. I'm saying let's make it just continuously
yeah.
better.
Well, it's been great. Let's make it better. Yeah.
Let's make it better. It's actually one of the greatest countries
yeah.
on the entire planet.
And Minnesota's one. And Minnesota's actually one of the cleanest states in the 50 states. I've been everywhere, and I just. But anyway, hey, this is a call-in show. Our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. We thank you that are watching Facebook Live. Blah blah blah. I just do this. Our main platform is Blog Talk Radio, and this show is being broadcast on Blog Talk Radio, and you'll be able to actually hear the podcast immediately after we're done by just clicking the link. Again, that call-in number is 347-426-3904. And our producers tell us that we have Mr. M from his palatial estate in South Minneapolis live on the air. Good morning, Mr. M. How are you?
Very good, gentlemen. Very, very good. I think you've been kind of ducking M lately, Don, and I don't know. Actually, I saw you, Don. You had a tennis racket the other day, and I challenge you.
It was
anything.
Not a tennis racket. It was a racquetball racket. Don't play tennis.
Either one, Don. But I did want to comment, gentlemen, on what you were saying about our political climate. And what I want to ask you, Don, is what happened to the moderate Republicans, the ones that could reach across the table and get things done? You know, instead of all this rancor that you – we see all of that. Okay, but we have the gobble-gobble man at the national level. We have – where are the moderate? Where are the moderates, Don? Can you answer that?
Mr. M. Yes, I can. Mr. M, if you're talking locally in Minnesota, I can answer that. On a national basis, I cannot answer that. I know locally, if you're looking for the Republicans that can reach across the table, you have Senator Carla Nelson. You have Senator Michelle Benton, Republicans I'm listing now. You have Senator Roger Chamberlain. You have Senator Mark Perrin. You have Senator Dan Hall. And the ones that can reverse back, reach backwards, like State Representative Raymond Dean, who can talk to anybody anywhere. So you do have these politicians that can reach across the table, but you have to have politicians on both sides of the aisles that can reach back and forth.
Absolutely.
And so we've been demonizing. That's why I like to separate Minnesota from the rest of the United States, because I do not want to bring President Trump into this picture. We have a easy solve. Okay, Minnesota's on the verge of being a red state. Okay, I'm just going to say that. And there are solutions. There are people here that can make sure that the black community's voices are heard. But in order to make that happen, we have to support and get the right people in office. And like I said, we don't endorse anybody here. This is not NPR. We're cheerleading for everybody, DFL or Democrat. It's like, no, we don't do that. But what we do is we give an opportunity for those people to come on and talk with us and go from there. And so with that said, there are people in Minnesota I know that can reach across the aisle.
Okay.
Your next question, sir.
Okay, well, next. You never really mentioned anything about the Democratic side. You never mentioned, like, there's a new person that seems to be coming up. What is his name? Melton Mew? Or I've seen a lot of, getting a lot of press.
Yeah,
seems like he's getting a lot of money. Seems
yeah,
like he's
Mr.
making
Mew.
A lot of noise in this thing. What are your thoughts on that, Don? Any thoughts?
Okay, quickly. I know Jonathan has some thoughts, too, but let me add my two cents. Melton Mew. Melton Mew, you know, good, bad, indifferent, or whatever. He came out of nowhere and raised mega dollars. And the only attack that Ilhan Omar, because, you know, for our international and domestic and international listeners, Milton Mew is running for Congress against the incumbent Ilhan Omar in the 5th Congressional District with his Minneapolis, Richfield, and some surrounding areas in that area of the city. And he's come in and he's raised millions of dollars. And the only attack from the Ilhan campaign is that he's making all this money from outside sources where, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. We didn't say anything about her getting money or Congressman Ellison at the time getting 80% of his money from outside of Minnesota. So I don't care where this guy, but from a marketing point of view, I think who's ever handling his stuff has made an impact here in Minnesota, especially with the TV ad schedule and the radio and the billboards, et cetera, et cetera. So, as far as his politics, Mr. M, I haven't heard him talk long enough, and he's actually never answered a question for me. I've never asked one, to be fair. But until that point, you know, I can't deny him. But go ahead, Jonathan. Tell us what you know.
I would talk about we have Milton, we have Ilhan Omar, we have Toya Woodland, and we also have the other guy who's running on the Democratic side as
well.
Well,
we have Lacey Johnson, too, don't we?
We have Lacey Johnson. So we know for sure it's going to be a person of color coming up a congressional 5th district. I would say about Ilhan Omar, she's at a very that's totally fine. You know, sometimes we get that feedback. When we're thinking about Ilhan Omar and we're seeing what happened the last couple of years, the fight that she got, you know, she's part of the Radical Three, and they're at a spot where Minnesota is, like you said, it's actually turning red. I call it a purple state, but it's actually turning red, and they know exactly what's been going on with her funds as far as her paying her husband's law firm and consulting firm over $1 million. And when you're talking about other people raising money, but then you're doing almost like, hey, you're paying your husband that actually is going into your bank account. We're at a spot where we say, what are you doing this for? I'm all did come to the Black Fourth. I want to say that she did come to my event on the Black Fourth. But as far as her coming down within the community, talking to the people of in the residence. That's not happening. And we're looking for other people. It's okay. And this is what I want to tell Minnesota, and I want to tell people from all over the United States. It's okay to have an educated black man in power.
Yeah. Oops, there it is.
There it goes. And Milton actually is highly educated, and I think that he's at a spot where, you know, he's a descendant of slavery. He's got a little more historical pieces as far as him being in America versus her. You know, she did come from a refuge environment in Somalia. But I think right now that she used that, and many of the liberals within our Minnesota use her, actually her pain and of refuge and all that, to actually to make themselves seem more cultural, and that's why she actually got in. She hasn't done anything for Minnesota. Do you know any legislation that she's got done?
I think she helped with that Crown Act about the hair. Remember the hair, the natural hair thing,
which is
I listened to a meeting quickly here because we do have another caller, standby caller, 816 area code. But I listened to a meeting earlier this week by the Council of Minnesotans of African Heritage where State Representative Rena Moran was really condemning the Minnesota Republicans and talking about they were so arrogant when they went into the room. But she didn't tell anybody that. When she went into the room to negotiate, she brought a cast of bad actors with her who disrupted the whole meeting and kind of attacked the GOP candidate sitting there who actually came to the table and says, okay, let's do this. So that was never necessary. And we do have a call here, Jonathan. I want to get this caller because they have
absolutely.
Been on. Caller, you're live on Our Black News. What's your question or comment? And this looks like a number that I've seen before. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, this is Steve from the Midwest.
Hey, Steve.
And Mr. Allen.
How you doing?
Mr. Allen. Good. I had a question for you about some storm clouds possibly on the horizon for Minneapolis. And one of them is, what happened if the family of the George Floyd isn't compensated, like the family of Justine Diamond? Is that a real possibility? Because from what I understood, they had basically used up all their money to pay her. What's going to happen then to Minneapolis? What do you think? Also,
you know what? It's not. I said it's funny that you bring that up, but it's not funny because, as you know, sir, you are a gifted intellectual of looking underneath and into things and. Mm-hmm. The distraction from the dollar amount and those conversations have been squashed in Twin Cities, in the black community. Besides Jonathan and I, you know, I don't think anybody's even talking about what happens if not. Because I'm going to tell you, based on this film footage that I can't even watch anymore, of George Floyd being killed and dead on the ground, if his family doesn't get in excess of $25 to $30 million from the city, you thought the little burn down they did, you know?
Oh my God!
That, you know, I might have to get out there and act a damn fool, okay? And that's rare. I don't even do it.
Right.
Yeah.
The clouds are coming. We know that, and those decisions are made by the Minneapolis City Council.
Yeah.
They're afraid that. Andrea Jenkins, and this is probably another thing, but probably mad that they're ready to give George Floyd's family $25 to $30 million, which they need to, because we know when they gave Justine Demond's family $20 million, and we know that her fiance was going out to eat with Mike Freeman. Oop, I didn't supposed to tell you guys that.
Oops.
But they were going out to eat, and that's why he got that type of large settlement. But months after, this same Minneapolis City Council only gave 1% to Jamar Clark, who was killed by the Minneapolis Police Department, which is a slap in the face, a black man as well. But what we see is that the life of a black individual, and this is what Minneapolis City Council is saying, that was Andrea Jenkins and everybody else on there, Tano Gordon and everybody else, you guys are telling, and Gavin Gordon actually told me sorry. He did. I got it on camera. I screenshot and all that. He said, I'm sorry. When I said, are you kidding me? you gave Jamar Clark's family 1% of what a white woman got. Is it because she's white? And they said sorry. They said absolutely sorry. And what
wow.
they're saying is if they are, if there's 400-some people killed, are they willing to give an access of $400 billion or $200 billion to these families? I don't see it.
No, no, not at all. Go ahead, caller.
No. Well, also, I mean, another thing kind of occurred to me, too. What happens if some of these four police officers get off at some point? I mean, I think there's a real possibility that at least three of them could get off.
Yeah.
Three is going to get off.
You know, Allison says three, and I say two for sure.
Two for sure.
Especially who is like his first week, that rookie.
Jay Alexander.
Yeah, who told, you know, Chauvin that we should probably turn him over. But just imagine if he would have gang tackled Chauvin and took him off him and George Floyd would have lived, that kid would have lost his job.
He probably would have been arrested.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, and we have to look at this in a rational way because, caller, this goes to your first question. How does the community react that in some cases do not do deep reads? And they find out that, okay, two of the officers are, the charges are dismissed, and they walk. You know, is there a medium or an extra large upheaval in town? Because the facts aren't on the table other than what's commonly known. So that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And like you, I agree with you, Don, that the two are going to get off, that Thomas Lane and Jay Alexander. The two that they'll get off. The Tao might get maybe a year or two. Chauvin might not get anything more than 10 years. Plus, we know if he does get convicted of killing George, which he did on live on camera, that he gets a bonus of $1 million.
Huh. Who's giving him that?
Well, it's coming from his pension.
Oh, wow. Wow. Cha-ching, cha-ching. Anything else, caller?
The only other thing, I heard you guys talking about defunding the police, and I don't know what the budget is for the police, but I think it would probably be wise for them, if they're going to defund them, at least defund them enough to set aside money for the family of George Floyd, because I think it could be a real problem coming up in Minneapolis if they don't do that. So. That's all. Thank you very much. All right.
Thank you, caller. Appreciate it. Nice hearing your voice. That's really strange. That's interesting that he says that because they're actually trying to change the budget of Minneapolis City Council for the police. And if they take that $100 million or whatever, I'm thinking they're going to use a piece of that for George Floyd's family. That's just what I'm thinking right off the top of my head. But, Jonathan, we do have another caller. And we want to get them in. Caller, your last four is a great year, 1994. You're live on our live. Who's calling? What's your question?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, sir. Yes.
Hey. You know, I would be very cautious, and I would definitely caution the city of Minneapolis that none of those officers better not walk. You think you saw this state burn down? Like, they had a duty to serve and protect. They served the hell out of George Floyd. Nobody protected them. And so I'm telling y'all, and y'all know it, Jonathan, you know it. None of those officers better not walk. If so, then you're saying it's okay to stand around and watch someone get slaughtered. The other piece, defunding the police. They just had police removed from schools in St. Paul and Minneapolis. Keep that same budget. Keep that same money. And invest in some of these doggone family members, invest in some of these dads, invest in some of these grandmothers, and give them that same kind of money you were paying police officers to be a school resource personnel within the doggone. You always talk about parent-teacher involvement, parents being involved in school. We're paying them. You're the best way to stop crime in our community is give a brother an opportunity to make $50,000, $60,000 a year. And I always say that. You know, Don and Jonathan, man, before I leave, I want to say I love y'all both, man, and keep doing what you're doing. You know I roll like four flats with both of y'all.
I love it, John.
All right, thanks for calling, man. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I agree with what he just said because there's enough money out there right now that you could hire unemployed dads, unemployed and underemployed mothers and families and communities around the schools and create learning hubs throughout the city in St. Paul and Minneapolis with just little sprinkles of cash, enough for folks to get what they need, to do what they, you know, need to do in life, you know.
Right.
And we have to find out, number one, where that money's going. If they're not going to have police, I'm not sure the contract even ends.
I know, and that's what we have to hold that thought too, because we have to make sure that was a good point that John said. He said that since the resource officers have been removed out of the school, that takes the officer numbers down, I would say, and you don't need as much within the budget. So what are, but also with that being said, we just realize that the schools aren't going to be paying them as well. So.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And so we have to figure out how we can access that money and make sure that it's used in a meaningful way to actually help out, you know, these parents and these folks that can come and help us with our scholars. I'm sitting here this morning, Jonathan. I'm looking at the Star Tribune, and it's really funny because my wife and I, we had a babysitter who was at our house one day, and 2 days later she was at someone else's house, and then 2 days later she took a COVID test and then ended up COVID-19 positive. So last Tuesday, my wife and I went and took the COVID test. It's not that bad because they didn't stick anything up our nose, but what they did do is they tickled the hell out of our tonsils. But we're both negative. But there's a group of people, and I have to speak to this. I know Rashad Anthony Turner is talking about it too, that are trying to create fear about returning to the classroom, okay?
Right.
We know we want our kids to be safe, okay? I've never called a group of my students a little germ locker, as some of these teachers are doing online. Like, oh, all these germs, these kids, these germs. That's code switching for little black kids and Hispanic kids and Asian kids. You know,
right.
they don't want them little, you know, people in their classroom with all these germs. So they're doing some code switching with that. But the thing is, there's an opportunity here to do the hybrid model and increase it slowly, because what's going to happen is there's no procedure set up for the fall for the kids to understand what they're going to do. But yet you have the union sending out these surveys and say, hey, we have 10,000 signatures from all – I didn't sign it. All these teachers saying they're scared or they're afraid. I said, you're scared, you're afraid. Well, last year you were scared and afraid of black kids in the school.
Right. And you touched on a major point. You know, and I'm at the spot with COVID-19. I'll just talk on the record because I'm fairly knowledgeable on exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Is it real? Yes. We know that the mask, though, and I brought one for a reason to show everybody, because we're hoping we were going to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these masks right here on the back of the box, it tells you it does not stop the coronavirus. They have to do that for legal purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we know that Anthony Fauci, who's the head epidemiologist on it, it said that prior on a 60 Minutes, you guys can look it up, said the masks don't stop anything. We have to actually get back to going back to business. And how that looks moving forward, it's we have to be cautious, obviously. But right now we're coming to a spot or intersection within America. A lot of people don't know what the GDP is.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Great Depression, GDP was, and if I can, I have to go find this number real quick and let me find it, because I want to be exactly right on exactly what I'm saying, because this information is so vital, because here it goes. It says a 1% drop in GDP is a recession, okay? Just
1%. 1%, yeah.
Yep. We call the 6.5 drop in GDP the Great Recession. In 1929, we called the 15% drop in GDP the Great Depression, okay? The GDP drop right now is at 33%.
Dang.
So that was the Great Depression, was at 15%. We're at 33%, and we might hit 40, okay? If we hit 40, Don, I really want to stress this, right? 33%. Mm-hmm. We're double plus more the Great Depression, and it hasn't even set in. The great this you know, these adverse effects come down after this stopped. This hasn't even stopped. We're still in the middle of it. So now the Great Depression times two right now is on its way, and we're looking at 75 to 90 million people unemployed.
Easily.
Okay.
Yep, you're
easily.
Right. You're right.
Okay. Now, what does this look like for America? What does it look like specifically for the Black community? Because when you look at the numbers during COVID-19 within Minneapolis, or, well, Minnesota, in the Black community, 50% of all of the Black people in Minnesota, out of that 6%, take the whole 6%, half of that 6% is unemployed.
No stream of income whatsoever.
Zero. And the unemployment, that $600 that everybody was getting that they were happy about, it just ran out. And the HEALS Act, and the HEALS, when I say HEALS, it's H-E-A-L-S Act, has not went through yet.
Yeah.
So the second stimulus hasn't went there. People are stressing. They're going to put their money in for tomorrow for the unemployment, and they're not going to get nothing but $150 or $200. And next week, listen, they don't get this done by this weekend. Next week, we're going to have violence that we've seen all year.
Yeah.
Next week, across the board, across the next.
And the irony in this all is that, you know, you look at Europe.
Right.
They're giving their people a check every month. And I'm not saying this to have handouts. This is not a handout thing. This is
or socialism.
Or socialism. This is not socialism or a handout, but people need to have some type of cash flow to survive. And the people in Europe are like, they're sitting back. They're not getting a lot, but it's probably equivalent to our $1,200, but they're getting that each month. And the United States of America, you know, God bless America, they have the ability to do the same thing. But the Democrats this week blocked this money again. Okay?
Yep.
And they decided that something was not, and that's kind of harshly putting it. I don't want to like demonize the Democrats.
I'm just saying
that because of a technical issue, the headlines in the mainstream media were that the Democrats blocked this next stimulus. And so, like Jonathan said, we have till next Friday to figure this out.
Right.
And that's it.
Right. Oh no, you hit it on the nose. They're worried about the minor little things within these acts. Let's stay focused on what's going on in America. We're in a capitalistic country. People need to pay their bills, and they don't have a job. And I looked on the jobs that they're suggesting for people to do. They're saying, you know, there's places like McDonald's, fast food places. Now, I'm telling you this, and nothing wrong with just people working at McDonald's and stuff like that, and I want all the teenagers and anybody else who works there, wonderful. It's a beginner's job, right? Let's just say that. It's a beginner's job. Well, with that being said, people who have went from project managing, making $90,000 to $110,000, when you're telling or suggesting them to go to McDonald's to work, that is almost like a slap in the face.
Yeah, you're going to get these hands.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're making these decisions on saying, I have to, my mortgage is $6,000 saved, but you're $5,000 a month, and you're making good money, and you both lost your job, and everybody's complaining, oh, you got the $600, you should be good. And even a lot of people that I know who went unemployed, the $600 didn't even compensate for what they were actually making. And so what it looks like next week, Don, it's going to be violent, it's going to be domestic abuse off the chain,
people
are going to be divorced, people are going to be fighting, police calls are going to be up the chain, and accompanied with this coronavirus ICUs. Another thing, the Minnesota ICUs are filled up. It's trauma season. They have no more room, Don.
Yeah.
There's no more room.
Yeah, and people aren't realizing that, and I mean, some are not, let me put it like that, but this economic stimulus package that people in Europe are getting every month, and then they dangle $1,200 in front of us like that's supposed to be wonderful, and that's not really hitting on anything. And I think that Minnesota could have set an example with their budget surplus in the very beginning. by making sure that everybody in Minnesota was well taken care of via.
It's gone. The money's almost gone. It's already gone.
Yeah. And each state, like I know St. Paul got $24 million from the COVID relief, but we don't really know how they use that. I mean, I'm sure they can justify it with charts and graphs and pretty letters and big fonts and, you know, make everybody go, yeah. But really, did you use that in the communities that need it? Like, there's some desperate minority ethnic communities, and I don't mean to use that term, but Black, Asian, Hispanic, Latino, Somali communities that actually need help. They need to maintain feeding on a daily basis. I'm talking about breakfast, lunch, and dinner in some of these neighborhoods. And I don't mean no BS. I mean some eggs and some bacon and some ham and some toast and some good hearty lunches for the kids and family and some dinners and also something they can take home with them to snack on to the next day, because these folks have zero income. And it's a shame that this governor, you know, Sleepy, I call him, is not on his game when it comes to Minnesotans. Now, he's fine. He's having the best barbecue. The governor, lieutenant governor, the state representatives in the Senate, they're eating the good steaks. You know, they're taking the trips to the cabin on the weekend. You know, they can order food from Target, from Aldi, from Cub Foods. But there's a large part of the people that they represent that can't do anything.
Do that. And you touched on a couple major things. If I was in the position of Governor Walz, I would be on the news having a press conference every damn day, talking directly to Congress, directly to the president, and everybody else to tell them, do you see what's approaching? Do you know what's going to happen? You guys are actually causing this. And, Don, you know how vital school lunches are to people?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And now people are saying, well, school, they've been hungry all summer. People have been stealing. Luckily, we had this unemployment money, and, you know, the hood is doing pretty good right now. The hood is going to make I live pretty close to the hood. I will tell you this, that if we thought George Floyd, and, you know, we have so many different things. Luckily, the trial's in March 8th in the middle of winter, so it ain't going to be that hostile, but because when these guys get up. But think about this, Doc. The schools are going to be closed more than likely, or people are districts. What's going to happen is it's going to get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
They're going to have another meeting in the next about 2 weeks, and they're going to say, "Emerson, you guys, we're not going to be able to do schools. We're going to do distant learning from home. We're all going to they're going to do it. I already know what's going to happen."
Yeah, that's crazy. So, I can't, you know, event. I mean, we understand that taking classes online is a thing. It's been a thing since for years, right? But in this mass movement and without the proper instruction, see, this is really funny. Let me break this down in a few minutes here. You had the 1920s and before that, when a fifth grade education, you can go from a fifth grade education, become a doctor, a lawyer, or whatever, right? Then later on, as soon as the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, they put in this junior high piece and this high school piece, okay?
Right.
And so school extended from kindergarten to high school. But schools never really, and education never extended in the Black and minority community from kindergarten to college for anybody, yellow, red, black, and white. And so we did not give our students the full breadth of this is how they do it in college. Because in college, you can take classes online and stay at home or go to work, and you don't have to be in that classroom Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So
they know that. They know that. Yeah. They know that they're the models for the college students that are out there. They have the technology. They have the programming and templates, all that. What is happening is cannot be at home. We have to talk about the daycare aspect. They cannot be home during the day when parents or grandparents. Some grandparents are saying, hold on, I'm old. I have underlying conditions. I don't want some kids around me. Grandparents ain't even want to see their kids no more, grandkids no more, because they might die. So if the parents have to work, or if the kids live at the home with the grandma, and the grandmother is not technology savvy,
Yeah.
And she said, oh, baby, go ahead and just go outside and go play. We don't know nothing about that internet. Now, the kid, unfortunately, is going to fall behind.
Yeah. Well, that's
it's
happening now.
Tons of kids are behind.
Yeah, that's
so
happening right now.
Do the grades. What do we do?
Yep. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's the thing. It's like 10:30, and I like to wrap up the show for the morning because I know we both have big missions to do this weekend. I know I do. I have to finish writing, but anyway, that's a whole other thing. Jonathan, tell them when you're on during the week and how to find you.
Okay, you can find me. My business website is Jonathan Mason at Mason Tree Consulting. That's MASONTREE Consulting.com. Again, that's Jonathan Mason at MasonTreeConsulting.com. If you want any services, you can reach me there. I'm also throughout the week live with Mason if it's after 12 or if it's before, mornings with Mason. Each and every day, I try to keep it on. I'm also working with a couple foundations to help them and other groups to try to help bring this change within Minnesota, and that's how you can find me. You can find me on my page, Jonathan Mason, on my public page on Facebook, and then Our Black News with John Allen every Saturday at 9:30.
Yeah, I'd like to thank everybody for listening. Next week, you can tune in either Wednesday or Thursday. I haven't decided yet for the last question, which is I'll interview some politician running for office. Hopefully, it's Lynn Crockett. Lynn, if you're listening, I'd like to interview next Wednesday or Thursday night. You let me know when you can do it, and maybe we'll have you back that Saturday, too, for the show with Jonathan and I. So thank you for listening to Our Black News. The podcast is available as soon as I click end. Game round, get away.
Until we get our share.